Hello, I'm Tamiko Faison, your host of Therapy Entrepreneurs and Leaders of Color, a podcast featuring therapy entrepreneurs and leaders of color who are leaders in their space across the world. The purpose of this podcast is to inspire therapists, particularly therapists of color, by sharing the accomplishments of therapy entrepreneurs and leaders of color, and to support them in their roles. Today, we have a very special guest that I know personally. I'm so excited to have Dr. Khalil Johnson here this morning. I'm gonna read her bio and then we're gonna jump right into the interview. Dr. Khalil Johnson is an assistant professor in the Division of Occupational Science and Occupational Therapy at the University of North Carolina School of Medicine. She also serves as an affiliate research faculty member at the Virginia Commonwealth University Center for Cultural Experiences in Prevention and a senior reviewer for Elsevier Clinical Solutions. Broadly, Dr. Johnson's research focuses on access and participation in health and vocational services of racial, ethnic minority adults with intellectual and developmental disabilities, as well as developing culturally affirming interventions to increase their community engagement. Her research is published in the Journal of Occupational Science, Journal of Intellectual Disabilities, Intellectual and Developmental Disabilities, Open Journal of Occupational Therapy, just to name a few. Dr. Johnson's interests are informed by 13 years of clinical experience spanning Georgia, North Carolina, and Virginia. She is a member of the American Occupational Therapy Association, the World Federation of Occupational Therapists, the National Black Occupational Therapy Caucus, the Coalition of Occupational Therapy Advocates for Diversity, the Society for the Study of Occupation USA, and the American Association on Intellectual and Developmental Disabilities. In addition to her contributions as an active member of these organizations, Dr. Johnson also serves as the Advocacy and Policy Coordinator for the Developmental Disabilities Special Interest Section for AOTA. She lives in Durham, North Carolina with her partner, Julian, and Labrador Retriever, Roxy. They enjoy international food tours and cooking classes, yoga, museum hopping, fashion, spending time with their nieces, and reading nonfiction. Welcome, welcome, Dr. Khalil Johnson.
Thank you.
So I read your bio, which is absolutely amazing, so impressive. I know you, again, I know you personally, and I have always admired just your leadership role in our profession. But can you just tell us about yourself in your own words and how you became an occupational therapist?
Yeah, sure. So I am from Monroe, Georgia, which is a quiet rural community due east of Atlanta. I'm the oldest of two girls. My sister, Denitra, is actually also a healthcare professional. She's a clinical licensed social worker working in addictions in Atlanta. I say I had sort of the typical sort of like country upbringing. I had, you know, two parents, both worked in a school system. Dad was associate superintendent of schools, mom, third grade teacher. So, you know, my sister and I, we were always well-behaved because the last thing you want to hear a teacher say is, do I need to call your dad, right?
Right.
And, you know, my grandparents lived a couple miles down the street one way, uncle down the other. So, you know, just had the sort of quiet, like I said, sort of regular kind of upbringing that we think about. We think about rural living, rural communities outside of cities, you know. So yeah, that's, I guess, my background.
Okay. And so how did you get to occupational therapy? Your parents, you said, were in the education system, but how did you find out about OT and get involved in the profession?
Yeah. So my exposure to OT really came after my father had a stroke, and had a, you know, occupational therapy evaluation as part of that. It was a, not a significant stroke. I mean, it was one that affected, his vision, and memory. So learning some strategies on how to still sort of participate in his work, you know, somebody who has a significant amount of responsibilities in the school system needed those strategies to be able to return to work. So that was really my first exposure to OT. Thought it was interesting because, you know, we think about healthcare and medicine. We think about doctors, we think about nurses, sometimes physical therapy, but, you know, primarily doctors and nurses. And it was something that sort of stayed in the back of my mind. And so an opportunity to take a health professions course in high school came about. I did a little bit more research in occupational therapy, but it still was sort of like my second year into college before really definitively declaring occupational therapy as a major, because I actually wanted to go to school for clarinet performance. Yeah, went completely left on that. but it was something that stuck with me, and I thought it was interesting how you could really sort of blend medicine and rehab and social science in a way to really help people in healthcare in a more meaningful way. And at the time, there was a real demand for occupational therapy, as we still continue to see now. And Brigham University had one of the highest ranking programs, and it was, you know, a little over an hour from where I lived. And it made sense to see if I could get in and start observing OT in more settings. And I did, and I was hooked.
Yeah.
I was hooked. Yeah.
Awesome. Yes. That's one of the things that attracted me as well, is the social science, that it's not just the traditional science that we think of in health professions. And so I can see how you were attracted and got hooked like I did as well. So you're a leader in the space now. Let's talk more about your leadership roles. And you're also an entrepreneur. So this podcast is titled Therapy Entrepreneurs and Leaders of Color. And you're both, because we've worked together in some entrepreneurial endeavors in the past. So let's talk about your roles and expand on how you became a leader and what you're doing in those roles right now.
Sure. You know, like you mentioned before, we've done some work together, and it's still hard for me, I think, to wrap my head around the entrepreneur part, because like you are the model for me on that. So I'm like, am I really an entrepreneur?
Yes, you are. You know,
I think part of being an OT, and then when you're an independent contractor too, is, you know, branding yourself and selling yourself as a business, you know, as a healthcare professional who's able to you know, provide these services. So I guess in that sense, yes, I'm an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
Saying I'm a leader sometimes is hard too. And I don't know if that's an imposter syndrome thing or just something that I think people of color in the profession have to grapple with, but really sort of owning that title of leader in the profession. So I'm now back at the University of North Carolina as an assistant professor in Division of Occupational Science and Occupational Therapy. You know, plus, like you mentioned before, having some affiliate faculty positions at other institutions and then serving as a senior reviewer for Elsevier. But I think, over the course of 13 years and sort of serving on small committees and places where I've worked, but also making sure that I've been involved in my local OT association, civic organizations and stuff, really sort of helped me develop the skills, I think, to really dive into both occupational therapy and occupational science societies in a way that I thought I was able to contribute more meaningfully, if that makes sense. So the like consistent service that I do now, even outside of the classroom, is serving as the moderator for the Twitter chats for the Society for the Study of Occupation, for people who are on Twitter that participate, not side chat. I moderate those sessions, and then serving as the advocacy and policy coordinator for AOTA VD special interest section. And part of what attracted me to becoming a professor, since you mentioned that first, and researcher, was really being drawn to research as a master's student. I really enjoyed learning about the scientific process and what it meant to actually be a scholar practitioner, collecting data, analyzing that data, using it and translating it into practice was compelling. Because up until that point, my exposure to OT, their field work, we really didn't talk about the research things and how was it that my clinical instructors were taking information from AJOD or from OT practice and integrating it into what they were doing in the clinics. That part for me wasn't made explicit. And so being able to learn about that in the classroom was something else that was really thought-provoking, but also challenged me. And it was something I was like, I don't care what I do as an OT, I'm coming back to research at some point. Mm. And so I was encouraged to work a little bit and then pursue a PhD. And then that whole process, just helped me dive in deeper into, you know, what it was that I could do as an occupational therapist and now science to support building evidence and knowledge that directly impacts practice. And on top of that, I just like learning.
Yeah. So you saw needs and then you jumped in and filled those needs. And I had the privilege of actually hearing you defend your dissertation. So I just want to say congratulations on that. It may feel like it was a while ago to you, it's still, you know, a vision in my mind, a positive one. And not only was I able to attend, but I brought my two sons because I wanted them to see that image of a person of color, a female of color, strong female, a leader defending their dissertation. So thank you for that invitation.
I appreciate that and remember it like it was yesterday.
Yes. So you mentioned imposter syndrome, you know, like, to, you know, difficult to address, to really grasp that you're a leader, and maybe it was had something to do with you being a person of color in this profession. And we were talking about statistics before the show that it's between 4% and 6% of professionals in the OT profession who are actually African Americans. How do you think this fact has impacted your roles, if at all?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think the percentage of African Americans in the profession directly and indirectly impacts what I'm able to do. I think indirectly, you know, I have either decided not to pursue something or felt there was a barrier to me pursuing something in the profession because, you know, we people of color, just we weren't on the radar, right? Mm. And we can't really ignore the fact that if you're not in the room with certain people and at the right time with folks who will affirm your value and contributions, will be looked over time and time again. Mm. So I think, yeah, really aligning with other people in the profession or the allies of the profession who understand the unique contributions that people of color, you know, all these network groups, that multicultural network groups that we would see on the AOTA website, you know, just sort of these other contributions that we have and it being valued and then utilized more strategically and more meaningfully by our AOTA leadership. And then maybe more directly, I think occupying spaces of leaderships, it can sometimes make you the mouthpiece of Black female occupational therapists and occupational scientists. You know, I'm often asked to speak on our behalf, you know, because we all think the same way, right?
Right, exactly.
And for anybody who didn't realize that, I need to say I'm being sarcastic when I say that. But it's true, right? You're the only person in the room. And so you're then asked to speak for everybody that looks like you or is Black presenting, which is the favorite thing for people to say now. But it also inspires me and gives me the opportunity to open spaces for other OTs of color, or OTs who have different histories and different ideas to bring them to the table. And I think really the profession needs that desperately now more than ever.
Yes. What advice would you give to therapists of color who want to go in into leadership roles, who may be feeling or or indirectly impacted, just as you mentioned, and are choosing not to pursue certain roles because of the barriers where they may feel like they're going to be looked over, they're not going to be valued. What did you do in order to take that leap, knowing that you have those barriers to face, and what advice would you give others?
Yeah. You know, like you mentioned in my bio, I'm 13 years in now, and it took some time. So being patient with yourself and I would say moderately patient with others, because you're in a situation, of course, that is, you know, oppressive, then, you know, obviously we need to move quicker on those things than others. But being patient with yourself in gaining the skills you really need to, I think, negotiate these spaces as a Black or Latina or Asian or, you know, Native American, anybody who has a minority identity status, like how to negotiate that space as that person who's also an occupational therapist. I mentioned this before, you know, like aligning yourself with people who share your same values and interests, develop, you know, a mentor mentee relationship with that person, because you'll need people to back you up. You know, it is sometimes lonely to step out there by yourself and speak on things as a person of color. And so to know that you have allies in the profession who will back you and affirm your positions is also important. It's important to, you know, get involved in your state organizations as well as AOTA, stay abreast of what's happening, and participate in the online discourse. You know, there's so many opportunities to, I think, participate in advocacy and do other things that doesn't require you to be present physically. I know sometimes people don't find those spaces or physical spaces welcoming. So participating, I think, in online discourse is another way to sort of enter into leadership in AOTA or any other occupational therapy related organization. And then just, you know, I made a strategic plan for how I wanted to contribute to the profession, you know, decided what I wanted to look like, how long it might take, what sorts of tools I needed, and identified people who I thought was going to be supportive, because I have aspirations to go all the way to the top, and awesome. You know, it's about sort of planning those things out strategically now, and you know, sort of building a reputation for really being a champion of not just people, but the communities we serve, because that's most important, I think.
Yes, yes. Well, that's great advice, getting involved and being connected. And I notice, because I do follow you on social media, that you're not just connected to people of color in the OT profession, but you reach out even beyond our profession and connect with persons of color in other professions as well. Can you talk a little bit about on that?
Yeah. So, I mean, I sort of treat my work like I guess professionally, like I did clinically, you know, interdisciplinary teams or transdisciplinary teams, and networking was going to be important. So I think developing my own skills, one, as a leader in profession, as professor and as a researcher, also required that I partner and network with people that either whose interests align with mine, but also just had the skills that I was looking to develop, and also people who just inspired me, you know? And so I've connected with a lot of people through Twitter, from MDs, PhDs, and social workers, criminologists, interventionists, statisticians, classroom teachers, community activists, just so many people whose work, like I said, inspires what I do, but also applies to all sorts of work that I'm involved in. You know, it doesn't have to be directly in intellectual development, disability, or even occupational therapy, but it's really about people who are doing work that really betters the lives of people. And I I want to be connected to that, right? I feel like we're only as good as the people we occupy spaces with, and I want to be connected with good people.
That's awesome. All right, you got the right idea. You're looking at the bigger picture, which you said, which is most important, is who we're serving, the mm-hmm. population that we're serving. Now, you mentioned earlier, you said, I want to go to the top. And I was like, yes. I just love the way that sounded. So what is next for you? What are your professional goals? What does the top look like for Dr. Khalil Johnson?
Yeah, well, that top goal, that's a long term.
It's a long-term goal, okay.
And, the immediate goal was, you know, tackling the things I need to tackle to get tenure here. So, you know, focusing on building a program of research and really understanding the cultural barriers of facilitators to utilization of health and social services for racial ethnic minorities with intellectual developmental disabilities. Continuing to sort of move through SSO and AOTA, I think both horizontally and vertically. I'm in this coordinator position now in a special interest section and sort of, you know, thinking about, you know, what's next to sort of building that resume to becoming a board member and then, you know, eventually AOTA president. We'll see.
Wow. That would be so awesome.
I think so too. You know, I think it's a tall order, but, you know, if I can't envision it for myself, nobody else will. So,
right.
Yeah. So that's, like I said, that's a long-term goal for me. But right now it's really making sure that my work here in Chapel Hill is really touching lives in a real way. And I'm not just sort of doing this research to sort of keep admiring issues and not really using the information to make sure we develop plans to change situations for people.
Okay, that's awesome. So you have your immediate goals, you have your strategic plan, and then you have this long-term goal, you said, to you know, be the AOTA president. And I don't think have we ever had an African-American or person of color as an AOTA president?
Mm-mm.
No. Okay. Well, we would definitely want to support you in your immediate endeavors and when you get to your long-term goal, support you in that one as well. So how can we support you now in your endeavors? What can people do who are listening to you and saying, oh, wow, I really, all what Dr. Khalil Johnson is saying resonates with me and I want to support her. What can we do?
I think, you know, people sharing their stories so that, you know, our profession at large understands that our experiences are different. You know, the needs of our communities are different. And being able to share that and when others share theirs, that you are, you know, retweeting and sharing and blogging about it, because the more we talk about it, the more exposure it gets, the more that I think our profession as a whole can grapple with what it is we're really doing to serve these communities. Are we just, you know, talking heads, or are we really walking what we're saying we're doing? I also think just, you know, showing up. You know, I feel like the only time, I don't want this to be taken the wrong way, but I feel like the only time we like African-American OTs really show up to really move the waters on something is at conference when we have the National Black OT Caucus meeting. We need to be doing something outside of that. Like, that is not the only time I want to see us gather or us plan things. And if we are planning it, we got to market it better. Like, whatever we're doing, we just got to be more visible. Because if we're not pushing or encouraging our leadership to really move on matters that are important to us, they'll continue to just be put on the back burner. And we can't afford as an organization, as a profession, for that to happen. And the public at large can't afford for that to happen. So we just gotta I think collectively move a little bit better than what we're doing. So yeah, so sharing stories, mobilizing and really stepping out on faith and doing what it is we're called to do.
Yes, yes. So sharing the stories on social media, which I, as I said earlier, you are amazing with social media. I love your Instagram. How can people find you on social media?
Yeah. Okay. So I am the Academic Diva on Instagram, and shout out to my friend Kiana, who actually gave me that name. And I am Ox Science Bay, so OCC Science Bay on Twitter. So follow me, reach out, let's connect.
Okay. And the Twitter chats, mm-hmm. how can they find those? Would they also be on your Twitter?
So for the Twitter chats, you can follow the Society for the Study of Occupations account, which is OCSI_USA. And it is a public account. So as long as you are following SSO USA, you can follow the chats. They happen every fourth Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Participants of the chat, we also encourage them to have their Twitter accounts public. So one, folks can see your tweets and engage in dialogue with you. But also by using the hashtag, we index the conversation. So we really want people's responses to discussion questions to show up in order, and in real time. That's really the basic way of engaging in the Twitter chat. And we have instructions on the SSO Twitter page as well. Okay. But if people want to reach out to me directly about it, that's fine too. But it's really, you want to follow the SSO USA Twitter page for that.
Okay. And we'll get those links and put those in the description of this, the summary of this podcast. What's your favorite occupation? Or I mentioned a few in your bio, but do you have a favorite occupation or you want to share?
A favorite? I probably have three that I engage in regularly, I'll say, besides like sort of basic ADL kind of things. Definitely enjoy reading. My sister says I'm a book hoarder, but I'm a book collector. I really enjoy reading. If you do follow me on Instagram, you know I'm a big fashion buff.
Yes, you look good.
Tour and sort of also discuss what does looking like a professor like? How do we what constitutes professorial dress, right? So there's lots of conversation about that on my social media. And then cooking, I enjoy cooking. I like cooking classes. I have vacations around food tours. So really, really into that as well.
Well, sounds like you have a very occupationally enriched life, and I really appreciate you sharing your experiences, your goals, and again, you definitely are a leader in this space, and we want to support you in your endeavors. In closing, what would you like to, anything else you would like to say or add, or just a pearl of wisdom, a quote, just ending words for today's show?
I did not think of a quote that I wish I had, but I feel like one of the things that my father, who is now deceased, that he said to me after I graduated high school, that has stayed with me forever, is to, like, no matter what we do in life, to do things not as the exception. You know, everything we do is because we align our lives to do them, and they're not meant to be the exception.
I love that. What beautiful words of wisdom. Well, that's this week's episode of Therapy Entrepreneurs and Leaders of Color. Thank you again, Dr. Khalil Johnson, for being here. Don't forget to subscribe and join us for the next episode. I hope you were inspired. I sure was, and I know I will continue to be inspired by your work. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.